It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
There's comedy, there's magic, and there's craziness in Las Vegas. And my guest has two out of these three talents. Well, okay, maybe all three. We'll find out. He's comedy magician Adam London, and he's performing the afternoon show at the Ahern Luxury Boutique Hotel Thursdays through Mondays, 4 to 5 p.m. And for ticket information, go to ahernhotel.com, and you can find Adam on adamlondonslafternoon.com and follow him on X. And Adam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ira. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, what always amazed me about you was your ability to actually make enough money to support your 20,000 kids doing an afternoon show in Las Vegas. But you have,
especially in this town, especially in this economy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even more so. Right. Exactly. For people that may not know your background, I want to just give it a little bit, have you actually do it. I don't need to do it. But you were actually inspired by your grandfather in terms of.
That's right.
So share a little bit about that with us, would you?
Yeah, sure. So my grandpa was a farmer, and he built homes. He was an engineer for the city of Ogden, Utah, and he had a little farm, and he'd get me to come over and help him on the farm in the summer times, and he'd teach me little magic tricks, and I picked him up, and that's kind of what got me started. So he was an amateur magician. He did it for fun, you know, family reunions and things like that, just to try to get, you know, the kids interested in what was happening. And, you know, he'd go on before any big event would happen, he'd always do a little magic trick. And I was always fascinated by it. And that's where I just picked it up from my grandpa.
Do you remember the one trick that stood out in your mind?
It was this terrible, terrible, awful card trick. I think everybody, that's like the first card trick everybody learns. But as a kid, right, that thing was amazing. And then my grandpa, he also had dentures. He had false teeth. And so, there were times where it was so gross. He would like clean out the food out of his dentures. And as a 6 and 7 year old boy, watching somebody's teeth come out of their mouth and then go back in, it was like, what is happening here? This is the most amazing thing ever. But he was just cleaning his teeth. It was super gross. But we all just thought the grandpa had these amazing magic abilities to do whatever.
So his first magic trick was losing his teeth.
That's right.
Yeah, or making them disappear, I should say, right?
That's right. Yep.
That's amazing. So how did you start your career? I'm going to get away from using the word journey because everybody uses journey, including the group Journey. So let's move that aside. How did you start your career once you realized you were interested in the broader sense of entertainment, because you're a very funny guy and you obviously, you know, magic, and you may be a little crazy, as I mentioned in the intro, we'll find out as we go, or we find out that I'm the one that's crazy. Who knows? We'll figure it out. But how did you develop that career in magic and comedy? Where did it start? Was it in Utah? Or did you go elsewhere?
Yeah. So it started with my grandpa. And then I always had really supportive teachers in high school. So I had an English teacher, Mrs. Atkinson. Miss Atkinson is what we called her, Miss A. And every class, she'd always let me perform before she started her class. And so nice. I'd walk in and she'd be like, you got something for us today? We'll open with whatever you have. And so she was always very supportive. She was also the lighting director of all of the theater plays that I was involved in high school. And then I had a theater teacher who always was really supportive of me doing it, Mrs. Nelson. She was like, you should go out. You should do this. You have a knack for this. You know, you're a pleasure to watch on stage. And then I just kind of stuck with it. So it kind of got started in high school with the support of teachers. And then I went and got a degree. I always liked doing theater. I always liked performance. And so I moved down from Ogden to come to Vegas to UNLV, and I got a degree in musical theater.
That's quite the jump. And yet,
yeah, my parents are ticked.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, I never realized that you made that initial connection through education and then debauchery. So yeah. It's good that you made that subtle move, but that's great. So you went to UNLV, then it's a magic and entertainment and craziness, as I mentioned again. I bring that craziness back every so often.
Well, and it was always fun. Like, people always tease me when I first moved here. I mean, Vegas is a whole different culture than growing up in a small farming community in Utah. It's very conservative, very Mormon community. And then moving here, you know, people always gave me a hard time. They're like, was it difficult to move to Las Vegas? And I was like, no. I had to sit my parents down and say, mom, dad, mom.
Well, that accounts for your 20,000 kids you now have.
And that's right.
I understand you have your own stake. It's all just the kids.
Yes. In fact, I have four, and three of the four of them are upstairs. I said, you guys just play with the Legos. I'm going to go down. I'm going to do this interview. Just keep your mouths quiet.
Do the kids appreciate having a dad who is a comedian and a magician and a father, all three of those at the same time?
My oldest is 14. Well, he'll turn 14 in July. But he, this morning I was taking him to a summer camp, and you know, 14-year-old teenage boys, they kind of just grumble and, they're just angry all the time. And something happened on the road, and he quoted a line from my show, and I was like, you ham. So, you know, he'll quote my show. That 14-year-old, my son Luke, he could probably do my show word for word.
Is he at that point, since he's 14, that he would be too embarrassed to bring his friends and classmates to see your show?
No, not at all. Actually, he was at throw my kids in these summer camps all summer long. But he was at a summer camp last week over at UNLV. And I was there with him, and we were kind of meeting some of the kids that he was going to be staying with for the week. And he goes, this is my dad. He's comic magician Adam London. I'm like, look, you don't need to tell him my title. Like, come on, they don't care. They don't know who that is. They're like, and the one kid said, well, actually, I've been to your show.
You missed the point. Your son wants to be your announcer.
Yeah,
you know, that's the reason. And for those who are just tuning in, listening and watching, Adam London is performing in the afternoon show at the Ahern Luxury Boutique Hotel Thursdays through Mondays, 4 to 5. It's a great hour. I've seen the show. And what's interesting, too, is that, and we've discussed this when you were on the last time, is that you chose to work clean. And what I mean by that is not that you take showers, which you do, I assume, but that in the terms of your choice of material, you work clean. And in a way, it's courageous, but at the same time, very strategic, because you're dealing in a large river of comedians, most of whom don't necessarily work clean. So you stand out as a result.
Yeah. Do you know, when I first got started doing comedy clubs, I started at a couple of different local comedy clubs here in town. And I worked with a comedian by the name of Peter Berman. And Peter Berman, he's from Los Angeles. He performs quite a bit at the LA Comedy Club. And I was working with him. And, you know, I was kind of like, yeah, I kind of work clean. He goes, dude, always work clean. He goes, that's the best thing to do is work clean, because you can get booked everywhere. Sure. And so I've always that always kind of stuck with me. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't work blue. I work clean. So I, you know, he's like, you'll book more gigs that way. And I've always taken that truth to be, you know, to be gospel, to be truth. And I've gotten a lot of bookings because I am a clean comedian.
Yeah, it's
squeaky,
not
clean. Squeaky, yeah. Clean.
There he is. There he is. For those who are watching or not watching, he just brought the duck in. So, I think, too, it's not just comedy clubs and nightclubs that you can work in, but corporate gigs, too.
That's true. Especially in Vegas, when you get hired by a corporate group, they oftentimes want you to work clean. You know, they'll send no blue humor. They hope that you'll just remain clean.
Well, you work yellow.
Yeah.
You just showed us the duck. So there you go. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Now, is it true that you have an agreement with any place that you work that you get first in line at the buffet? I'm just curious about that based on what I'm.
Yes. And that's what four kids. Yes. I'm always first in line for the buffet.
Yes. It just occurred to me as I'm looking at you. I thought, well, I could ask the question. He'll understand.
You know, it's crazy, Ira. Like, my wife, she's like, Adam, you need to start losing weight. You need to lose weight. And, you know, and the one day we were joking with my kids, and my youngest son, I have a 4-year-old too. And he came over and he goes, Dad, so what, Levi? And he goes, your belly's big. And I'm like, you're right. It's like, you're right. Out of the mouth of babes. So Yeah, it's time. I got to lose some weight and stop being the first one in the line for the buffet.
Get that out of the contract writer, you know. It's not even the backstage donuts and coffee and
that's right.
Soda. It's the buffet.
Well, no, and it's sad. Like I always enjoyed buffets. Like Vegas is kind of getting away from that. You know, they don't do those like they used to. So
no, you're right. For those for those watching or listening from out of town, Adam's been in Las Vegas performing for a long time. And if you there's not that many afternoon shows. And so, again, that very strategic of you to find that time, or to pick that time, I should say, because, again, you work clean. It's an afternoon show. A family can feel comfortable going to it. I think there's a few double entendres, but it usually is fine.
Yeah, yeah. I've not had one complaint about my double entendres. Everybody's been pretty good about it.
Oh, so they didn't get my letter then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll send it again. I don't know. Maybe just. I don't think I put the stamp on the letter. That may be to go. I'm very cheap. But anyway, I know you have a great crew, but how do you structure your show so that it works for you? I know this sounds like a simple question, but it's really not, because it's an hour and certain things have to work at certain times, meaning lighting, sound, etc. So it has to be structured in a certain way, but you have to allow for a certain number of ad libs, dealing with the audience, etc. How do you mesh that together? That's probably the better question. How do you work that together?
That's true. It's my show has always been pretty simple. The thought was I could walk in and just set up and do the show. Like the only thing I need is some lighting and a microphone. And, you know, when you get into when I was downtown at the D Hotel and over at the Orleans, you know, they wanted, it's like, well, yeah, you could do that. And that's fine. But we got to make this more of a production, because that's what people come to Vegas for, is right. That production style of a show.
Right.
And so while the act speaks for itself and I can do it anywhere. Yeah. You got to get your lighting right. You got to get your sound right. You got to get your sound cues right to make it feel like a production, as opposed to just some knucklehead up there pulling jokes out, you know. And, you know, it's not vaudeville anymore. We've got, you know, there's some structure that goes into, you know, these performances. So lighting, sound cues. When I was first starting out years ago, back in 2013, you know, I only had like three sound cues. And my sound engineer at the time was like, what, three? That's all you have is three? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, dude, you need to get more. Like, you've got to have more. And so we slowly put him in over the years. So, yeah, you know, there's the performance element to it. But then there's, you know, the sound cues and the lighting and all of that has to still come together.
Sure.
Oftentimes you don't think about that as an audience member.
You go in and you appreciate the performance, not realizing the work that goes into it in that sense.
Right.
So I talked with your wife and we talked about whether, if you had to give up one of the three things, would it be comedy, magic, or craziness? What would you say?
Donuts. Donuts.
Okay. Fair enough. That was number four.
gosh, you know what? I probably the craziness. Like this is, it's crazy being a dad of four. I have four kids, and being married to my wife's a librarian at an elementary school.
I see what you just did there. I heard what you just did. You corrected yourself. You said librarian.
Librarian. Yeah. You know, librarian.
A lot of people forget the R. I know.
Yeah. That's the farmer in me. Librarian. The librarian. Yeah. She beat me. But juggling four schedules, it can get crazy, you know, being a dad and doing church events and being with my wife and helping out her at her school and helping my kids at their school. It's you know, you juggle a lot of things. So the craziness is, it's crazy. But, you know, I have a lot of parents who come up and they're like, oh, enjoy these moments with your kids, because once they're gone, they're gone. And so I'm like, I'm trying to enjoy the crazy and embrace the crazy.
Well, then you have time to read a book.
That's right. Someday.
Or get back in line at the buffet. One of the two.
That's right.
Maybe
that's
both right. Of them. I don't know. So, how often do you introduce a different illusion? I'll call it an illusion or a magic trick to the act, because you've been doing it so many years and successfully. Do you ever look and say, okay, I'm going to slowly integrate this particular illusion that I've discovered or I like? And you're not going to just... You're not just going to put it into the act, but you're going to create a storyline around it too. So there's not just the performance of the illusion; it's the writing of how you want to approach that too. How often does that happen for you?
For me, I tried. I can't remember the producer. I think it was the director. It was Al Prince. Hal Prince, the famous Broadway director, he directed The Phantom of the Opera, Sweeney Todd. And I liked what he said years ago. I watched an interview with him and they said, you know, Hal, how do you decide what shows you're going to direct? And he goes, it's easy. It's what I like. You know, it's what I like to do. And so I think with magic, it's the same thing. If I like the trick and I like the effect of it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to put that in my show. But now with Vegas, it's tricky because there's other magicians. You'll see a routine. And then somebody else over here at the other casino is also doing something similar to that. And so out of respect to the other magicians, you kind of, you know, you kind of gauge and see what other magicians are doing and try not to do what they're doing and try to not to use the same pattern, the same old standard vaudeville jokes. You know, you try to make it your own too. But, you know, be respectful of those who are also, you know, trying to constantly make their act better as well. So it can get a little tricky, but ultimately, if it's a trick that I like the effect on it, I'll put it in there. Mm-hmm. Now, how often I do that, it depends. I just did a corporate event on Monday night, and I'd performed for this group 3 years previous or 3 years ago, and I went in with a whole new, different act, and they were like, "Wow, I'd never seen." You know, and one guy that had seen me, had been to my show a couple of times. And when he saw me, he goes, "Wow, I didn't know that you knew more tricks than what you normally do."
Well, this part of your title is magician, so I would think you would know more tricks than you necessarily do.
Exactly. So, you know, so there are certain things that I'll try to change it up. I don't know, every 6 months I'll try to add something new, remove something. Who was it? Do you remember Nick Lewin?
Yes, very well.
Nick Lewin was in town.
Very British guy.
Years ago, British guy, great guy. And Nick Lewin said, you know, you try to change it up to make it more interesting. So one, that you're not bored with it. But he's like, always remember that people constantly go back to McDonald's to get the Big Mac. So there are certain tricks that are, you know, people are going to want to bring their friends back to see because, you know, you made that woman's ring disappear and reappear in a sealed bag of M&Ms. And exactly. some people want to come back just to see that effect again.
And to see friend. And to see you eat the M&Ms.
Right. And get that Big Mac at the same time. So it's a catch 22. It's like, well, what can I, you know, get rid of, but still keep so that people will want to come and watch it.
Nick Lewin too had a great charm about him too. He was always funny and magical at the same time. Speaking of the magic community in Las Vegas, what I've noticed over the years is that it's a very, I don't know what the word would be, but it's a level playing field for magicians. In other words, there's not that much of a hierarchy between magicians. They respect each other and they learn from each other. They share with each other, et cetera. There are some exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, the magic community is that way here. Do you find that as well?
I do. Everybody here, for the most part, I think has been pretty supportive of me, and I've always been pretty supportive of others in the community as well, other magicians in the town as well. I mean, some people have their beefs. I mean, you're right. There are some situations where that doesn't always necessarily ring true. But I think for the most part that magicians, you know, we talk about the brotherhood, the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And I think if it truly is a brotherhood, then we shouldn't crap on each other and say awful things about one another and support each other and say, hey, that was a really cool effect. I like your presentation with it, as opposed to, you know, being bitter about it, be like, well, why didn't I come up with that? So you see that in the community, too.
Sure. I think there's more of that in the comedy community than there is in the magic.
You'd so be surprised.
You're in both communities, so you get double the fight.
That's true. That's true.
And I know you didn't ask, so I won't show you the French drop, but let's move along. Okay. So now when you're putting together the show and you're writing, do you run it by your executive producer, otherwise known as your wife, or do you just know it's going to work, or do you try it out among different people?
Absolutely. Always run it by the executive producer. And my wife, she's funny. She has written quite a few jokes for my show over the years. And she's got a quick wit about her that, you know, she'll write a good joke. I'm like, I'm still in that. We were at a family reunion a few years ago. And she said something funny, and I looked at her, and my father-in-law looked at me, and he goes, "You're stealing that, aren't you?" And I'm like, "You're dang right, I'm stealing that."
Well, it's a marital asset, you know. It's fine. Don't
yes, it is.
Of course, on the other hand, she's collecting royalties from you for working. Yeah.
So. I always joke with her. She had a good friend of hers that she liked who became a doctor, and I was like, you know, you could have married that guy and been married to a doctor, but instead you married a magician. You know, how lucky must you feel that you get to write these shows and these acts and help me come up with this patter. So, but no, she is a huge support. She's always been, you know, I've showed her routines in the past. I'm like, what do you think of this? And she'd be like, that's really cool. What if you do this? And I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? And so she'll always add something fresh to it or some flair to it. She'll actually be there. We open on the 26th over at the Ahern, and she goes, "You want me to come?" And I'm like, "Do you want to come? Do you really want to sit through this again?" She goes, "Yeah, I want to be there to support you." And she's always lovely to have in the audience. And then she always will give a good critique at the end of the show and say, "You know, I don't. Why did you say this and not that? And you know, when you used to do it, you know." So it's nice to have. It's nice to have her. You know. Is her feedback? Her feedback, I'll actually listen into other people's feedback. I'm like, no, what do you know?
So, of course, you're just saying that for the record, but between the two of you, you're saying, give me some slack. So, no, it's great that she's supportive and she gives you feedback.
Yeah, very supportive.
Yeah. You got to get honest feedback from not only her, but from any of the production crew as well. They may know something that you're doing that you don't even know you're doing. Yeah. So, that works out fine. I think one of the reasons you're successful as well, and I hate to say it, but you have a likability factor.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that's what you pose no ominous threat to anybody.
I try not to.
Right. When they see you, you radiate sunshine. So when they come in, they see you, they go, okay, this is going to be okay. This will be fun. He's not going to make me uncomfortable. Now, how did the duck get into the act?
So years ago, you ready? This is quite a bit. How long do we have?
We're good. We have at least 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Go ahead.
I
got to go to the buffet line. So
we'll see you there. We'll see you there.
Of course. Ahead of me.
They're going to let me in first.
Of course.
So years ago, I had to go get a root canal on my birthday. And it was the only day that the dentist could do the root canal. And so I said, it's my birthday. I want to really do that. And he goes, don't worry about it. I'll get you a gift. I've got a gift for you. So I went there and he pulled out this duck tie and he goes, he's like, "Hey, I thought you could wear this." And I looked at him like that. I started laughing. I'm like, this is the coolest. First of all, who gets a gift from their dentist?
Nobody.
On their birthday?
Nobody. Dentists are notoriously cheap. Yeah.
And he just said, you know, you're a quacky guy. So I just kind of thought it would go with you. Rao Levitt was his name. He passed away a few years ago, but he said, "You should wear this tie." So I started wearing it. I wore it around to church. I wore it around to different functions, and people started complimenting me on it. In fact, this gig that I went and worked on Monday, people didn't know I was there to do magic. And one lady came up, she goes, "What a great tie. That's such a wonderful tie." And I'm like, that's why I wear the tie. So it ultimately got started from my dentist, Rao Levitt, and then the ducks just became this big theme, and the rest is history.
So did he ever get a royalty from that?
No, actually, I performed at an event that his widow was in, and I looked at her and I said, I said, "Teresa, do you remember where I got this tie?" And she goes, "I don't know where you got that tie." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Like, my whole act is built off of my relationship with your husband. You know, this tie is what kind of got this whole thing started." And she went, "You're right. You're right. That is the tie. He did give you that tie." So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Now that she had forgotten, but once you reminded her, she was good about that. I know because you perform so often in Las Vegas, did you get a chance to perform out of town? I know you've been in the Magic Castle in Hollywood and you've done television as well. Do you get a chance to schedule that within your crazy schedule with the four kids and the executive producer?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I have an event that I'm doing in September up in Utah. I'm going to help raise money for a couple of charities up there. So I'm going to go out and do a show up there. And oftentimes, I used to go and be on the road all the time. And, you know, you schlep all your crap around wherever you go. And And, you know, those road warriors, I take my hat off to those performers, comedians, magicians who go and do that. Another famous comedian magician guy by the name of Dana Daniels. He performs quite frequently in Vegas. And we were on a family vacation down in San Antonio, Texas, and he happened to be performing at the Magic Saloon. And I was like, man, he's a road warrior. That guy just, you know, his kids are all grown. He's married, happily married. And he still, you know, just takes his stuff everywhere, takes his bird everywhere, and still goes and does his show. And that's just, with having little kids, that's just, it's really difficult to get away.
Exactly.
For long periods of time and, you know, still try to be a dad to them too. You know, I want my kids to know who I am, not be like, oh, there's that guy that comes home every once in a while.
Clearly your son knows who you are. He introduced you at the summer camp at UNLV. So at least that part. And give him a job as your announcer. He sounds like he's right for it. So, hey, before I let you go, what do you see as the future for Adam London? Do you see continuing performing, which you are obviously doing, but also perhaps writing a book, doing more television? What do you see as your future?
Oh, I love being on stage. You know, we left the last hotel, the Orleans, in March. And, you know, there's something about having the drive to, like, want to be on stage and being funny. You know, my wife always jokes with me. She says, I know what your problem, if I get a little grumpy, she goes, I know what your problem is. Like, what? She goes, nobody's applauded for you for the last 24 hours. So that's why you're grumpy. And I think that as entertainers, you know, you kind of thrive. And there's something about that energy that you get from an audience constantly that you, I don't know if it's dopamine or what it is, but you kind of want to be always in front of a crowd. And so I think that's my biggest thrill, is to make people laugh. And so even if I'm not on stage, if we're out at dinner, my wife will be like, you know, we were at an Olive Gardens, the server was kind of grumpy, and my wife says, don't do it. And I'm like, make her laugh. She goes, why do you have to always try to make people laugh? And I'm like, that's just what I do. And she goes, I know.
That's who you are.
I think that's just me. So yeah, you know, we were joking about it a couple of years ago. When do you retire? When do you, you know, be done? I'll turn 46 on the 26th. So we're actually opening on my birthday at the Ahern. So I'll be 46. And my wife's like, when do you retire? And I'm like, I don't know. Do show cats really retire? Don Rickles never retired. That guy went on stage, did a show, and then died the next day. Like, do you really retire from this? I don't think one can. I think that I'll always be on stage or somewhere, probably in some old folks' home, telling these same jokes about Utah and talking about my kids. So, yeah.
Well, what's great about it is you recognize what drives you. A lot of people don't recognize what drives them, and they will deny that they like to be on stage and perform, but that's what they do. And you recognize it, and you balance it with a great family life. So it works out.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been comedy magician Adam London, performing in the Laughternoon Show at the Ahern Luxury Boutique Hotel Thursdays through Mondays, 4 to 5 p.m. For ticket information, go to ahernhotel.com. And you can find Adam on adamlondonslaughternoon.com. And you can also follow him on X. And Adam, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks, Ira. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey,